Welcome to the Communication 24/7 podcast, where we communicate about how we communicate. I'm your host, Jennifer Furlong. One thing I love about doing these live streams is I get to bring on guests who are so incredibly interesting. And not only are they experts within their field, but I just, you know, Tyler, as we were just talking before the show started, he's like an onion. We peel back those layers and there's just all kinds of cool stuff. So for those of you who don't know, Tyler Foley, the reason I wanted him on our podcast is He is a specialist in public speaking, and he has all kinds of great experience as an author, as a speaker, as a trainer, beginning with, you know, as a six-year-old, getting into movies and television. So much I want to be able to pull back on these layers and learn more about you, Tyler. But thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, it's my joy and pleasure to be here, Jen. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the exploration for you to get to know me better, for me to get to know you better, for your audience to get to know us better. Communicate 24/7. That's what we do, right?
That is. You cannot not communicate, even when you think you're just sitting there all silent. No, your messages can be loud and clear. Absolutely. So before we get into everything that you're doing now, and, you know, again, with the audience, I asked Tyler to be on the show because I really think he would be a great addition to help share his knowledge in public speaking and, you know, learning about how to become more confident in telling your stories. But before we get to that, I want to rewind the clock just a little bit to six-year-old Tyler and tell me a little bit about how, you know, I think that's probably the beginning of you being able to build this lifelong career that you've been able to develop, you know, in public speaking. And so tell us a little bit about that little six-year-old Tyler, and how did all of that begin? What happened there?
Well, it was definitely a catalyst for me getting the opportunity to be on stage at six, really cemented what was a burgeoning love of performance anyway. If you ask my mom, I was you know, a performer from conception. She claims I tap danced in the womb. So I could see that being the case. I've always fidgeted like my whole life. I'm a drummer too. So like if I'm having to sit, it's really hard for me when I'm doing the podcast, cause we've got the mic right here, you know, right. For me to not like tap out a rhythm, or if I'm just kind of waiting for stuff to happen, the intro, right? The lovely intro that StreamYard puts on. Like I want it. Oh yeah. It's got such a funk and a groove to it that I just want to like bop with it. So yeah. I've always been kind of rhythmic that way. I've always wanted to move. When I was young, I was always the kid when family would be over for you know, any kind of the family event, Easter, Christmas, birthdays, that kind of thing. I was always like, whoa, do you want to see the thing? I remember getting a magic kit, you know, those little box kits of magic when I was like three or four, and doing like real simplistic magic where you'd make the egg levitate, or I had a magic wand that I could dance with. I remember I did it so much that my aunt actually made me a magic cape. It was awesome. It was black velvet on the inside.
Oh, I love it.
Black on the out, but it was neon hand prints. So it was this neon hand printed outside cape with this black on the inside so that I could do more magic. It had my magic pockets and everything. It was awesome. I had a top hat for it. Like my sister was my magical assistant. So when I got a chance to be on stage at six, it was kind of already in the cards, but it was that kind of catalyst moment that really cemented, this is a thing that you're going to do for a very, very long time. And I have never looked back.
Yeah, that's wonderful. There were a couple of things. I love the fact that you're a drummer. My dad was a drummer, so I grew up understanding that whole need to just kind of, he was constantly with the drumsticks beating on everything. And I remember when I was really young, we had this old station wagon, you know, the old school station wagons with, like, you know, wood paneling and all of that on it. And I remember the very front of the station wagon, it was just beat to hell because he was constantly practicing on it, and just, it was just all beat up. And you
know,
one of the reasons I have my
truck is because it has this leather steering wheel. It's leather, it's a wood wrapped, leather steering wheel, wood wrapped. And the dashboard is leather too. And the way that the console is laid out, I have a really wide leather topped side console. So I literally I can do a full drum roll through, and the side is the perfect size for the hi-hat. And I do drum in the truck. So if I'm stuck at a you know, red light or whatever, or stuck in traffic, I have my drumsticks right there, and I will pull them out and I will tap along, and then the bottom of the steering wheel becomes the snare drum. The side of the window is my hi-hat, and then the top of the steering wheel is the top tom. I don't, unfortunately, this is just a 4-piece kit in my truck because I don't have a mid tom, but then I have the really nice floor tom, which is the side console. And I'll come up.
That's amazing. Impromptu jam sesh in the middle the middle of traffic.
In the
stop.
Middle of traffic.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're located in LA, right?
No. I was for a time commuting back and forth when I was really, really committed to acting. No, I'm doing my best today to hide my Canadian accent, but no, I'm way up north in Calgary, Alberta currently. Was in Vancouver, like I said, for a long while, and commute back down to LA on a semi-regular basis. Usually during pilot season, we'd fly down. And I'd kind of get a crash pad down there. It's weird when you're an actor, the things that you'll do. There would be a group of us, usually about 4 or 5, who were starting to do enough day player stuff that going down for pilot season made sense. But it was never is a guarantee anyways, but it was always going to be an off shot, because not only as a Canadian did you then have to be good enough to get the role, but then you had to be so much better than the next person in line for the producers to want to jump through the hoops to get you your visa that it was always we'll go down, we'll see. But because you're down for 3 or 4 months for pilot season and you're actors, and unlike everyone else in LA, you can't work as a waiter or whatever, and whatever barista coffee shop. We had to have all of the money built up, and then we just went down and lived in LA. So we would get 5 or 6 of us, and then we would rent a 2-bedroom apartment and get IKEA bunk beds.
There you go. Hey,
so you had 2 people in the room, and then 2 on the couch in the living room. And the only furnishing beyond the pullout couch was a TV and a PlayStation. So.
Yeah. But the cool thing about being in a group like that, I guess, is you already have a ready-made audience, so you could practice with each other, right? If you had lines and,
Well, that's the thing. You always had somebody to rehearse with. You always had people to workshop with. You always had, I was the most successful in that time period, because not due to talent that I had, but because of the social group that I hung out with that was so supportive, that was always on. It was very, I think that was the other thing too, is we were very diverse. So we were never going out for the same role. And even if we did go for the same role, you kind of wanted one. If it wasn't going to be me, I wanted it to be him, because we don't want it to be one of these guys. And it made for a really fun time period in my life.
Yeah, I bet. I hear there's a common theme, and I love this aspect of your journey, talking about your family and when you were young and just constantly moving and just even in the womb, just constantly tapping around. But it sounds like your family was very supportive of the fact that you had this need to perform. You had this need to get up, move around, do whatever it is that you wanted to do and, you know, entertain the family. And it sounds like you were able to have a friend group as well that supported that aspect of you. So, so important.
Well, and I think, you know, it's a lesson that I've you know, learned multiple times and continued on. The importance of having a community that has your back and giving mm-hmm. back to that community so that they have your back. Like you can't always mm-hmm. be a me thing, like being of service to your community. And when, you know, when you have the ability to be charitable, to be charitable, to be supportive mm-hmm. so that when you are in need, it's a lot easier to ask for help, and a lot more people are willing to volunteer help if you've been of service to your community up front. And I remember when I was 17, I had a medical incident that left the left side of my body paralyzed for almost a year. And it's right, you know, it was right when I was a senior in high school. I was, you know, in the, my, I went to a fine arts high school and I was cast in the main stage production. And that's actually a requirement of me to have graduated from the school, was to perform in said production. And January 1st, 1997, New Year's Day, I woke up and the left side of my body didn't work. And I unfortunately had to withdraw from the show. It cost me my graduation from my high school.
Wow.
I wasn't able to graduate from it. I got my high school diploma. I got my GED. Because I had more than enough credits to do it. But that right. one thing, to be able to say that I actually graduated from the Alberta High School of Fine Arts as opposed to attended the Alberta High School of Fine Arts, was unfortunately taken away. But I because it was such a community, you know, my friends really rallied around me. I had some unbelievable support. And then I had the support of a community as well. Like my doctors were basically family to me and surrogate fathers. I know Bob Corbett did a wonderful job of looking out for me, not only physically, but mentally. And I was really, really blessed to have the community that I did. And like, I'm still friends with most of the people that I went to high school with. We may not communicate all the time, but I talk to at least two people from high school in any given week. And they're not always the same people. And there's probably, I could count at least 20 to 25 people that I'm in regular communication with. And we are geographically diverse. Like I have friends that I still talk to this day that live in Dubai. I have friends, multiple friends in Thailand. A whole bunch of people went to Thailand for some reason. another few in Singapore. I have friends scattered across Australia and New Zealand. And I'm in, again, regular communication with them. I have one of my friends who graduated is a librarian in South Africa.
Wow. Wow. And,
you know,
yeah, they scattered to the winds, didn't they? Yeah,
she's super cool too. Like she was, you know, a really good girlfriend when I was in high school, and I love kind of watching her journey. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. You know, what an incredible, journey that you had to face with waking up one day and the entire left side of your body, you know, is paralyzed. And I think that's a testament to the strength of relationships, because when someone goes through something like that, in 2016, I woke up and I had Bell's palsy all of a sudden, and the entire left side of my face just stopped working, you know, and and here I am, public speaking teacher, right? At a local university and trying to do my keynotes, right? This is how I operate, right? This is what I do. And to not have that be able to function like it's supposed to. I remember going into class and I was standing in front of the class and we were going over their midterm exam and I was struggling so hard just to even form a sentence. And thank goodness one of my students just stood up. He's like, "Professor Furlong, sit down. You are struggling. I got this." And so he just took my notes and went over the exam with everybody. And
just got an A for it, right?
That's right. That I was like, bonus. Wow. bonus point, mad points. But, you know, it's helpful to have those types of people around you who, you know, not only are they compassionate, but they're compassionate in the way that they can also have a sense of humor about it. You know, my husband, he kept me laughing the whole time, you know, even though I had a hard time
it's
laughing.
The meanest thing when they do that. Me. My friends did that too. You laugh and you go, huh. And you're right? Like, how did you do it? It feels awful.
I was trying to sip some coffee one morning, you know, I had the straw, and then he showed me an episode of Family Guy when Peter had eaten one too many cheeseburgers and he had a stroke, and like the whole left side of his body was like melted off, and I spewed coffee because I couldn't control anything. Yeah. So I spewed coffee everywhere. And, but it was funny, you know, that just kind of keep you going, let you know that, hey, no matter what, you're still you, and we still love you. And, you know, we got your back.
Are you wanting to start a podcast, but don't know where to begin? Afraid you don't have the technical know-how to produce one? Trust me, I felt the same. The good news is I found the perfect program, and if I can do it, trust me, you can do it. The user-friendly program I'm talking about is called Alitu, the podcast maker. Alitu is an online platform that uses very simple drag-and-drop tools designed specifically for podcasters. You can edit an entire show literally in minutes, which gives you more time to create more content and concentrate on growing your audience. Don't worry about buying special equipment either. Just use what you have, and if you're worried about sound quality, Alitu automatically cleans your audio so you sound crisp and clean. So if you're thinking about starting a podcast, stop thinking and start doing. And if you're using another editing tool but you are not quite happy with it, I say give Alitu a try by clicking on the link in the show notes.
Well, and it, you know, it's funny that you're talking about the, you know, the drooping of the mouth, because I remember having to eat like you couldn't eat anything solid. So you had to eat the liquid, but you had to liquid like this and go in. I remember the moment that I realized something was wrong was not actually when I woke up. It was not even getting up the stairs. Getting up the stairs was weird, but I just figured I'd slept weird on my, you know, right. On my side, and everything was just kind of numb.
This will go away.
Because to this day, I still do that a lot, more on my right side than my left side. But I will fall asleep, and particularly if I've played hockey the night before, I will fall asleep, and my arm will go numb. Just, you know, exercise or whatever. And so I got up the stairs, just assumed that, you know, things weren't working because it was New Year's Day and I was tired and I'd slept on something weird and whatever.
Right.
It wasn't until I was brushing my teeth that I was like, I think something's weird here, because I couldn't keep the toothpaste in my mouth. It was just like,
same.
Just like pouring up.
Exact and I was same. Like,
why can't I brush my teeth? What is wrong with me? Why am I drooling? And my mom came in. She's like, are you drunk? I'm like, no. She's like, are you hungover? I'm like, mom, I didn't drink last night. I was the DD. She's like, are you sure? And I looked at her, and that's when she realized that something was wrong. I'm like, I promise you, mom, I didn't drink.
I know, right?
She was like, whoa, right? What is going on with you?
So. Yeah. Oh, that's this exact same thing happened to me. I was brushing my teeth. I went to spit, and I couldn't control anything. I looked in the mirror and I could visibly as it was happening. And it was the scary, I didn't know if I was having a stroke or what. So, you know, at the time it's a really scary thing. And, you know, so the thing about stories like that though, and I think this is a good time to kind of transition into, you know, what you talk about in, you know, some of your trainings, I think is stories like that. You know, something that we're able to use to connect, you know, to others. You know, some might be hesitant to share a story like that because in some way they feel that, you know, maybe it makes them less than, or, you know, it'll make people look at you a certain way. And now, you know, I could get really self-conscious and think, okay, when this starts twitching, is everybody noticing, you know, like something is twitching over here.
Yeah.
But sharing that story really just offers an avenue through which we can connect with someone else on a, you know, on a basic human level. We have that need to be able to share, you know, these experiences. So, Can you tell me a little bit about, you know, that's what you're doing these days, right? You're a speaker, you're an author. I do want to talk a little bit about your book because I love the title, The Power to Speak Naked. So I think that's the best title ever. But just kind of take us, you know, where you are now, what you're doing on the speaking circuit and what are some of the things that you're doing? You know, I know you're a trainer. So what is that specialty area of yours? What are you training others in?
Yeah, well, let's unpack a few questions that came out of that. First of all, you're right. It's the power of story that connects us. And so when I am doing pretty much any one of my training sessions, whether it's a free session in our Facebook group, Endless Stages, or if it's a one-on-one client that I'm working with, or if it is in any one of our Power of Influence or Power to Speak Naked workshops or seminars, at some point, at very early on in any one of those scenarios, I'm talking about the power of story and helping people find their story for the reason that you just mentioned. It's how we connect together. And one of the key pillars of my training and my core beliefs are that the thing you're afraid to say is what your audience needs to hear. Because, you know, it's as soon as I said, you know, I was paralyzed and this, and I was terrified, you knew exactly what I was talking about. Right. And it's, it's interesting that you had a Bell's palsy because they're not sure what I had. That's why I call it a medical incident. Bell's palsy would have been the most likely scenario. And it was what they were first diagnosing me with, except for I should have had feeling in the rest of my body, which I didn't. Stroke was ruled out because I shouldn't have been able to get better from it.
Right.
So what did I have?
Who knows?
In between that. But interestingly enough, I had it and my, you know, and I had to go through it. My mom was there with me almost a year of rehab before I could get everything working again, at least functionally to a point where I did it. And same thing when I get tired, I know exactly what you're talking about, Jen. I get tired or I get stressed or I particularly dehydrated and I start to get the twitch under here or I can start to get I smile lazy now and I'm like, and then I get really paranoid. I'm like, okay, time to get to a chiropractor because we got to get things adjusted because I don't want to so I'm very aware of it. Interestingly enough, 5 years ago, my mom actually did have Bell's palsy. Woke up and her face wasn't working. And who was the first person she phoned? Me. And so I was, my mom was there for me in comfort nearly 25 years ago. I got to return the favor 5 years ago. And then my niece 3 years ago woke up with a Bell's palsy.
So weird.
Mine very likely now that we have a family history was closer to a Bell's palsy, but it was a full, what Bell's palsy would just be again, the face. So it was a full body palsy of some sort. Nice thing is you can recover from it. And so I was able to be there for my niece and say, hey, I've gone through this. Why? Because of the power of story. I was, and particularly for her, because she was in junior high and a girl and, you know, she's social, but she's not necessarily popular. Like she wrestles for one, right. And, has won provincials twice, for her wrestling. And so, you know, she's a little bit of an outsider. And so, and especially at that age, you know, 14, 15 year old girl,
It's tough anyway. Yeah,
she was 13. Like these are the things that you don't need when you're a 13-year-old. Right. And just to add on to it. So I was able to say, listen, I was there. And then I was that resource for her. And then Nana, it happened to Nana too. So she had two people who could directly relate to what was going on. And it's that power of story. It's that power of connection. I could have just said, hey, kid, it happened to me and you know, you'll be fine. Or I could say, listen, I woke up and I didn't know how to brush my teeth. And then you said it. I said it. She understood exactly what I was saying. Anybody who's had that happen to them now knows exactly what we're talking about because it's those details. It's the specifics. The more specific you can make your story, the more universal it talks to people. And so that's why, you know, that power of storytelling becomes the key thing. As for the book, do I talk about it in that book? No, it's actually not in the book. Of all the things that I talk about in the book, that storytelling method actually isn't in it. So we're putting together a revised edition that'll come out next year because it's one of the
things
that I love to put in the most. And most of this book is it's that initial introduction into getting over the fear of of speaking, getting over that fear, more specifically the fear of judgment. Most people will claim to say that they're afraid of public speaking. And you and I both know, Jen, that is not true. We are not afraid of public speaking, or we would never be able to order food in a restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The reality is we're afraid of judgment, and I can help you deal with the fear of public judgment. I can't help you if you actually have a fear of public speaking, because you'll never go out in public and open your mouth.
Right, right. And this is an excellent example. You know, Larry, he posted on, he's watching on Facebook, the little, you know, sad emoji listening to our stories. But Larry, at the end of the day, it's really not it was a sad experience. But the important thing is, as we're sharing these stories and we're able to connect with one another and serve as an example to others who might be going through something similar, you know, it's a way to kind of share that hope and that sense of peace and that sense of, hey, you know what, this is, you know, temporary right here, what you're feeling right now, you know, it can and it will get better, you know, and have that sense of hope is so incredibly important. I'm so glad to hear that you're going to revise and add some more of that into the book, because I think it's so important for people to hear.
Going to expand it from 134 pages to probably like the 150, 180 range.
Yeah.
Like tack on at least another two chapters into it, if not three, just to, you know, especially the more that I've been doing the training, the more I have been speaking, the bigger the stages that I've got on, the more I have learned. You know, I've been speaking from stage now for 36 mm-hmm. years, but I'm always learning and I'm always working with, you know, it's fun. The names that I get to work with now, the people in the room that I get to be with. And it's fun. And to the sad face, it was terrifying for me. And when I was a 17 year old boy and who grew up in the theater. So I had actually painted my room to be like a black box.
Okay.
They're like super comfortable. So when I woke up, I was literally in a black box, and it was over Christmas mm-hmm. break. So I was totally isolated from my friends. And because my left leg didn't work, I drove a 1984 Honda Accord that was a 5-speed standard. So I couldn't clutch to go visit my friends. It was awful. But just prior to that, well, I guess it wasn't just prior to that, because it was 97. I think the song came out in like 1991. But one of my favorite singers of all time is Gloria Estefan, and she has that song Coming Out of the Dark, and I would like mm-hmm. play that, because I was like, me up, out of the dark. Right, and I would just like do this, because I would leave, and it was so metaphorical, you know, walking out of my black space into the light of day, and you know, nothing was gonna hold me back. And it was great. It actually it was one of the best things that ever happened to me, because it gave me the drive to get back on stage, because I was getting really complacent. Like when I was 17, you know, at that point I had been acting for 11 years, and you know, I was at the fine arts high school, and I was a lead in the play when I was in grade 10, and most grade 10s don't even get to be in the play at Wallflowers, but I was Sean Tyler Foley, and I could do this. And then I got to play Enoch Snow the next year. So obviously I was somebody of importance.
Obviously.
And that when all of a sudden the whole thing was stripped away, it was really humbling, but it also gave me a fire. I was like, cause everybody told me I'd never act again. I'm like, watch me.
Yes.
And it really reignited my passion for it. It also, made me hyper aware of when I do get complacent and if I need to step back, because the same thing happened when I was 25. I was like, I've gone through the shows. I don't even want to act anymore. It had become a job. And so I literally retired from the business for almost 15 years, where I just, I walked away.
You lost the passion for it.
Yeah. It wasn't fun, but again, got me onto the path to do this because performance, I'm never not going to be a performer. I just may not be acting in film and television for a bit.
Yeah. You know, there's something that you said that it's one of the things that I try to emphasize to my students when we're in the classroom and we're talking about public speaking and getting into that mindset of public speaking, because it's so easy to talk yourself out of things. But just even that act of you, you know, bursting out, you know, of the room and listening to that song and just even opening your arms, you immediately feel a transition and you're literally tricking your mind at that point. You know, it's like, okay, I wasn't feeling it at first, but man, okay, you know what? here I am, I'm doing it, you know, and I'm feeling it in my body. I'm opening it up, and my body and my mind is beginning to feel that as well. So, you know, that, yeah, that mindset and the ability to just, you know, impact that mindset is so crucial.
Well, and it's funny because, well, it's one of the, again, I have so many gifts from being a performer early on in my life that I did, that I'm just starting to understand now, like really in the last 5 years, I've become hyper aware of just how incredible those blessings were. But the main one is I've known for a very, very, very long time that I am in control of my emotions, because I've had to control my emotions to portray angry when I'm actually happy, happy when I'm actually sad or tired or exhausted or whatever. Like, you have to go on stage, and that I understand that emotions are entirely driven by our own mental state. And two, embracing the physicality of it. If you want to feel something, your whole body has to do it. And if you can embrace that with your body, you can do it. You and I were talking offline, you know, Friday I had a keynote presentation. I was sick as a dog. Like, I could not function, but I also knew that I could pull it together for an hour. I did everything.
It's a moment in time.
I knew that if I, you know, timed the cold and flu medication just right, and if I drank enough orange juice and water, you know, and I was staying, my hotel was just across the street from the venue, you know, I can get there. I'll be lazy and I'll get a taxi to take me, even though it was literally right across the street. The thought of walking was exhausting. Stayed in the green room until they called my name, and I asked that they play my intro song. This was not a crowd that actually would normally have an intro song, but I have trained my body to know that when I hear "Are You Gonna Go My Way" by Lenny Kravitz, it's go time.
Love it. Yes. You know,
and so as soon as, why? Because I'm a drummer, right?
Right.
And so I can't help it. I hear it in my head, and my body wants to move. It's just it's trained to know that it's go time when I hear that. And the promoter was kind of like, really? I mean, I guess we could make that work. We've got the, okay. And so they did, they introduced me, I got the song, and it was enough to get me going. And then once I got going, I forgot that I was sick.
And I bet the audience enjoyed it too. They came apart.
Yeah, the audience had no clue. So when it came off and everybody was coming around to chit-chat with me afterwards, I was like, you're going to want to stay way far away and your elbow bump. And they're like, you're sick? I'm like, oh, I'm dying. I got to get back to the hotel room. They're like, we had no clue. I was like, that's good. And the worst is it was for a health and safety conference too, in a time of COVID. Right. You really shouldn't be going in public. It's just sick. I was like, don't worry. Three tests, including the rapid one at the door. I'm good that way, but still don't do this. You know,
just stay away from the splash zone and you'll be fine. Right.
If you enjoy listening to podcasts, it's a good bet you probably enjoy listening to audiobooks as well. Have you tried Audible? There are literally thousands of audiobooks and podcasts on Audible, with new titles being added every week. So here's the good news. You can try out Audible Premium or Audible Plus free for 30 days. You can listen anywhere, anytime, when commuting, exercising, running errands, or while doing housework. Check out the links in the show notes to access your free trial today.
What advice would you give someone who they're like, okay, Tyler, Jen, I've never had Bell's palsy. I've never experienced anything like that. When I think about my life and the stories, I can't think of anything that would be even remotely as interesting as talking about, you know, that kind of thing that you went through. So what's up?
Well, first of all, I sympathize with you, because one of the things that always makes me laugh as a professional, communicator and speaker, and given the life that I have had, when people read my biography, I'm like, whoa, that guy is cool. I would love to meet him.
Like, sounds so good.
who's that guy, Jen? Like, have we met him? Do we know this guy? Like, he sounds awesome, you know? And I'm always fascinated when I hear my own bio, because I lived my life. And I think a lot of people, until you can actually step outside of the mm-hmm. lens are like, mm-hmm. I'm just me, right? I'm just Tyler. You're just Jen. We just live our lives. Like what? No That's big right. whoop. So one of the things that we do in our workshops is I show everybody that you have at least bare minimum 5 stories in your life. Mm-hmm. And the first part of the exercise you and I can do right now so that mm-hmm. anybody who's listening is able to do this really quickly. And that mm-hmm. is, it involves some simple math. So I want you to take your age, however old you are right now, and I want you to round down or up to the nearest 5. So round to your nearest 5, whatever that oh, number Lord. Happens to be, right? Yeah, don't say it out loud. I'll do the math for me. You don't say it out loud because nobody wants to hear 30-year-olds do math, right?
Right. Well, yeah. There you go. Yeah.
So
Gen X, that's all I'm going to say. Gen X.
Gen X. Yeah. So now we're going to take X divided by 5. So you round it to the nearest 5 so that this math becomes easy. You divide that number by 5. So you should mm-hmm. just get some nice whole numbers. So if I'm to do this exercise, I'm 42. I'm going to round down to the nearest 5, which is 40.
Right.
And then I'm going to divide that by 5, which will give me 8. So we're mm-hmm. going to have intervals of 8. And if there's some sticklers in there, they're like, yeah, but those last 2 years have been exciting and I want them back. Okay, you're fine. Tack whatever right. you rounded
you
down.
You can be flexible with this, right?
Whatever you rounded down, tack that onto your first time period, because I promise you don't remember your first 12 to 18 months. I have memories right. from 11 months old, but they're like just kind of like auditory things. So like, like they're blurry images. So I kind of right. think I remember stuff, but let's be honest. You don't actually have really good, clear, distinct memories.
And we don't even have really good memories for last week.
Yeah, yeah exactly. right. So if you want to do this and you're like a stickler for it, mm-hmm. if you have that remainder, do you have extra numbers, tack them on at the beginning. And if you had to round up and you want to subtract numbers, subtract them from the last time period, because we can, mm-hmm. It's hard to remember what last week was, but I have more recent memories than I do long-term memories. So whether you want to do that, the idea is we're going to divide your life into 5 even time periods. For me, those time periods are 8 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the question is, when I look back in my life for the first time period, 0 to 8, mm-hmm. what's the first memory that pops to my head when I think of that time? Mm-hmm. And it's the first memory that comes to your head, because that's going to be the most significant one. That's going to be the most important one to you. And it could be anything. It could be a smell. It could be a color. It could be a feeling. It could be a vivid image. It could be a something. For me, I have 2 that are immediately present in my mind that just pop like that. The first one is the first time mm-hmm. I was ever on stage. Right. Mm-hmm. Sound of applause that I got. And I know exactly where I was. And it starts the auditory, because it's the applause. And as soon as I hear the applause, now I can see everything. I know the stage that I was on. I can see the audience. I can see, because it was a Christmas pageant. I can see the wise men over here. I can see my best friend Lisa over here playing Mary. There was a little cradle in front of me. There was a small little doll and a whole bunch of presents stacked on baby Jesus's head, because I didn't know where to put the presents that the wise men were giving me. So that's where they went. And the audience laughed every time I did it. And it was joyous for me. And I can hear this, the laughter. I can hear the applause. I know what it looked like when they stood up. I know just that thunder sound when you get a standing ovation, everybody's like cheering and happy. Like that to me has been very profound. And it has influenced every decision that I've made, obviously, with my life. Like that,
right?
It was that precursor. It's the thing that really set me on a trajectory. So that is a very powerful memory for me that anchors me, that tells me and influenced and informed my decisions in my life. And then the next most powerful memory that I have, arguably the most powerful memory that I've ever had in my life, happened almost to the day 3 months later. And that is the sound that my mother made when a police officer and my family physician came to her back door to tell her that my father would never be coming home. The sound that she made was the most terrifying, wailing, guttural noise that I've ever heard in my entire life. It was so animalistic. It was haunting. And I never want to hear it again. And again, that has influenced a lot of the decisions that I've made in my life.
Right.
Like being hyper aware of how precious life is, how much we need to enjoy it too. So as tragic as it was to lose a father at 6 years old, I also had some incredible grace in that event happening, in that in losing one father, I ended up gaining at least 10 father figures in my life. Very strong, very incredible men who gravitated into my life to fill that void. And in fact, I would say exceeded and overfilled that void, because I got to have some great mentorship, some great tutelage from some incredible men throughout my life that I'm still in contact with. So, you know, and then all the lessons that come with that, and being, you know, I always think of the line in Princess Bride, the Spaniard must have studied, and in studying, he would have learned that man is mortal, which means he would have tried to put the poison as far away from me as possible. So, right.
What a fantastic scene. Yeah. Oh,
beautiful. It is just absolutely beautiful. The battle of wits. And I think about that, you know, I do recognize that man is mortal. And so I'm going to try and put dangers as far away from me as possible. But I also recognize that in order to truly live, we need to push ourselves beyond our comfort zones. So I look at something as, is it an actual threat or is it a perceived threat? And let's analyze it that way, which again is one of the first things I talk about in public speaking. Why are you actually afraid to speak?
Right.
And a lot of it comes back to those early childhood memories where somebody has either grown up in a household where children are to be seen, not heard. And so they say, you know, and it becomes ingrained that if they speak, there is a negative consequence for it. They're going to get in trouble or worse. Right. And it's the or worse that I really feel bad for those people, because there should never be or worse if you speak up and use your voice. But that becomes conditional, that becomes training. And so now they've learned that there is either emotional and or physical pain that comes along with
it's associated
using your voice. And so they're not going to do it. The other one is usually a memory of some being called upon in school, right? Usually early on in an elementary setting where you weren't prepared, you didn't know the answer, and the teacher called on you, usually to get your attention, which is just a cruel trick. And then you were unprepared and everybody laughed, or you said the wrong answer and everybody laughed. And then you learned again that there is a negative association with using your voice and speaking up in public. And those memories can be very formative. And so this is why I love to do this exercise. You break your life into the five time periods, and what are the most significant memories? And so you should have at least five stories, because it's real easy, because you're always going to have significant memories. So for me, I have, you know, this really joyous one of hearing applause that has really informed my life. I also have this really tragic one of hearing my mom wailing when my father passed away. Fast forward to the next time period, I remember the conflict of joy and sadness. The first time I actually grieved my father's passing, it was at my sixth grade commencement, and I won the award for the student of the year. I was the top student in my school, and I remember beaming with pride and walking past my mom, and there was this empty chair right beside her. And as I walked past it, I was like, it's a full auditorium, right? It's the end of the year assembly. Every parent, every teacher, everybody was there. And I remember thinking, why is that chair empty? And then thinking, oh, my father should be there. And then thinking, my father will never be there. And then it was this cascade of emotion where I ended up crying, thinking, my dad's never going to see me get this award. He's never going to see me graduate. He's never going to see me graduate from university. He's never going to see me get married. He's never going to meet his grandchildren. And I went through this massive, you know, thought exercise right there on stage bawling. Right. Everybody thought I was crying because I was happy to get
your emotions award. Were already heightened anyway.
Yeah. And I was happy to get the award. And that's the thing. It was this weird conflict where I was both incredibly prideful. And then the beautiful thing of it, as I walked past, I was like, no, it's not empty. Like if the chair was actually empty, somebody would have been sitting there. My father was there and he was there to see me. And I've always used that as a source of comfort. So, you know, the stories can have multiple lessons. And that's where this exercise really gets powerful. The math part of it and coming up with those memories shouldn't take more than 2 to 5 minutes, because I do want it to be the first memory that springs to your head. Right. And so for me, the two sounds at six, the next one is at 12. And then the next one is waking up with my face not working. But then the next one is the first role that I booked in Vancouver. Right. And the pride and the joy that came with that. The decision when I decided to retire from acting, I know exactly where I was in the path that I was on. The meeting my wife for the first time and knowing that I was going to marry her and her thinking that I was this crazy dude for coming and talking to her in the middle of an airport. I swear to you, I know exactly where we were standing. I can recreate it. Every time we fly through Toronto, I'm like, hey, this is our gate. And she's like, okay, you know,
cheese ball.
After my brother-in-law got married, he got married down in Jamaica and we were flying back and we had to go through Pearson International. And I was like, we got to go to our gate. We got to get a picture. Got to kiss. Right. Like I know exactly where we were. It's a joyful memory for me. My most recent memory is the birth of my daughter. Like I know everything that happened in that room, even though my wife was mad because I was sleeping through most of her labor because they had this nice little day bed for the dads. She labored, I slept. And then, you know, when my daughter finally came out 23 and a bit hours later, I was like, oh, hey, good job, honey. And then I got to be the first to hold her.
Of course you did.
I was there at the beginning. I should be there at the end. And that's how it happened. And, you know, so those are significant memories for me. And then where the exercise comes in and where, you know, I can't help your audience with this right now, and they're going to have to go and do it is ask yourself, why is that memory so significant to you? And it's that exploration of the why, and then the exploration of what are the lessons that can be learned from these memories. Like what's Les Brown says it famously, never make a point without a story, never tell a story without a point. So if you're going to tell these stories, what is the point of the story? And there can be multiple points and there can be multiple lessons. You can use stories in different ways.
Yeah.
But you need to know why you're telling that story, and it should have a reason behind it. And in that exploration, that takes significantly longer. But I promise you, everybody listening to this has at least five stories, and it may seem simplistic to you. But you never know who needs to hear that message until you speak it out loud. And one of the biggest disservices you can do to the world is to not tell your stories.
Yeah. You know, there's something that Larry posted, and I want to read it. I'm gonna show it and read it because I think it fits beautifully with something you said earlier. And I don't want to miss this opportunity to point out something that you said that I think is so important. Larry says, both of your stories are positive, and I wish I would have heard them years ago. Not that it to either of you years ago. I had a really bad experience in Iraq where my face was peppered with glass and my lower face, neck, and upper back has fresh tar from the road tucked under the skin. Mm-hmm. I was terrified to be out front for a long time. That's unlike me. Hearing others makes me feel as though we all go through things, and how we deal with them show who we are, but who we will become. And then he follows up with, not that it needed to happen to either of you years ago.
To happen to you either, Larry, but these things happen, and it's what we do with them that matters. Yeah, and by the way, Larry, thank you for your service. And, and believe me, I understand. I can't fully understand being in the line of combat, but I definitely sympathize with the defense.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's important. I'm so grateful that he posted that in the comments, because it relates back to something that you said earlier about the story that you need to tell, or maybe you're most afraid to tell, is the one that others likely most need to hear. And, you know, I just thinking about my own stories, like we choose the stories that we allow others to know about us, right? Mm-hmm. And it's very rarely that I talk about, you know, as you were doing the exercise, I was thinking about, okay, what stories, you know, would I share in that time frame? And I have a very, very strong recollection of, you know, as a very young child, there was a lot of violence in my home. Mm-hmm. You know, and grew up with alcoholism and there was drug abuse, and with the violence. And a very strong memory that I have is my mom and her boyfriend at the time getting into a physical fight. And she threw one of those really old school heavy, like 1970s ashtrays. That's like, you know, this big. She threw it at him. He ducked and it hit me. And I was only like maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 years old at the time. But it's that moment of just feeling the terror, right? And the chaos that was around me. And then fast forwarding to the next decade, you know, that I'm thinking about and seeing how those formative years really impacted my decisions. Like when I graduated high school, I went into the Marine Corps because I needed that sense of empowerment. I wanted to be empowered. I wanted to feel strong and in control. And, you know, and now I can see that connection. But that's an example of, you know, Larry, that's a story that I don't tell very often. That, you know, and I don't know why. It's not like it reflects anything bad on me, but it is hard. You know, it's very difficult for people to show that rawness, that side of them. But I think it beautifully, you know, with what Larry says, it beautifully connects with what you said, Tyler, in that sometimes that one story that you're most hesitant to tell, maybe somebody else does need to hear that.
Hey there, listener. One final question, because we are getting close to the end of this episode. Are you enjoying the content we provide at the Communication 24/7 podcast? If so, thank you. I'd also like to ask for your help and share our episodes on your networks. The more downloads we get, the more popular the show becomes, and the more opportunities for getting some sponsors. So yeah, that's it. That's the commercial.
Well, and it, I know this to be true. And if you don't mind, I'm going to tell another story to illustrate my point. I had the privilege to speak at an amazing event called Life by Design. And this would have been about 5 years ago now. And not only did I have the privilege to speak at the event, but I had the privilege to speak with a couple of really good friends of mine who are also really, really phenomenal speakers. And the keynote at the end of the event, I was the second last speaker to go. And then the keynote was a friend of mine, Jared. And Jared has made a very comfortable living for himself selling life insurance. And his talk is called The 10-Minute Time Machine. And he talks about, and I can't do it justice in the time that we have. This is a 45-minute keynote that brings you, you know, heights of laughter. He is so funny. He's so good with a story. You're laughing and then you're crying and then you're like deep crying, sobbing, and it connects with you on about 1,000 different levels because he's so good at telling his story with the details. But the 10-Minute Time Machine is about the moment in time where he was finally successful in his decades-long quest to find the correct combination of alcohol and pills that would allow him to leave this life and still leave his life insurance policy to his children, who he felt at the time would be better off with him not in their life than with him in their life. Because at that point, his wife and him had not only separated, but divorced. He had lost complete custody of his children. His wife had sole custody of his children, and he wasn't even allowed to have visitations with them that weren't supervised. And this one time where he managed to fake sobriety long enough at a family function for his wife, who needed a break, allowed the children to stay overnight at his house. But because he had become so patterned in his quest that it was automatic for him that he would wait in the middle of the night, he would wake up, he would go get his Rice Krispie Square because it was the only thing that his stomach could tolerate that would allow the alcohol and the pills to go in there and not make him sick, that he could then start trying these combinations of pills and alcohol, and he got it right. Got it right on the night that his kids were there. And he couldn't quite figure out why his kids were there. And he figured he was just hallucinating because obviously he's high, as you know. Right. And then his son, right when he was just like the light was coming, he knew that this was different. He knew that this was working. His son came into his focus and he said, "Dad, are you okay?" And then he panicked. He was like, "I can't." All of a sudden he realized in that moment, the last shred of consciousness in him said, "You can't, it can't be today. This can't be the day. This can't be the day. Not in front of your children, not in front of your children."
Yes.
And he managed to articulate enough mumbling to have his son phone 911. His son phones 911. Jared actually was legally dead for a moment. They revived him. The ambulance got there, revived him. They got him to emergency. They pumped his stomach, and he has been sober ever since. And the reason he calls it the 10-minute time machine is he goes, if I could go back in time and change anything, would I?
Mm.
I said, no.
Mm.
Needed to literally hit rock bottom. He thought he'd hit rock bottom, but he hadn't until all at what literally he could have lost everything in that moment. And he needed that form of jarring wake up for him to really, truly commit to his sobriety, to develop a relationship. He has a relationship with his children now. He wasn't going to have a relationship with them if he'd continued down that path. For sure, if he was dead, he couldn't have a relationship.
And that lasting memory of, for them.
Exactly. Oh. It's, you know, like all of the, all for all those reasons, he needed that moment to happen. And now he's got a great life. Like he, you know, again, sells life insurance. So how hard is it for somebody who sells life insurance to talk about trying to, not only that they were an addict and struggle with sobriety, but that they were suicidal and trying to end their life, but here, buy this life insurance policy, right? It's a very difficult thing for him to articulate, but he tells this story at Life by Design. In the audience was a woman by the name of Charlene, and Charlene had been gifted the ticket to Life by Design by a friend. And out of politeness, she went just to go, just because she was going to go. But it didn't really matter if she went or not, because the week before she had polished up and purchased a beautiful rifle, had picked out a beautiful spot in the middle of the mountains overlooking the lake in the hometown where she lives. And that was where she was going to end her life the following day after going to this little seminary thing. And she heard Jared speak and his details, his specifics about where his mindset was, what his routines were, like everything that he put into the story. He was, he's very detailed in his story. Right down to the Rice Krispie Square and why he has the Rice Krispie Square. Like we get details with it. And she said, you know, it spoke to me. I realized that I needed help. So she reached out on Monday. She put the rifle away. In fact, she gave it to a friend and said, this is what this was for. Do not give this back to me, no matter how much I ask. And I need to go get help. So she went and she got the help that she needed. She really worked on it. And the following year, she told her story at the next Life by Design, because it's an annual conference. She reached out to the promoter. She said, I've never spoken before in my life. And she never had. She's like, but I feel that this is a story that I need to tell. Like, I like one thing can do it. And she just felt that she had to go and do this. And the promoter was like, absolutely, you can. Charlene tells her story. And there are three people in the audience who are at various stages of the same planning that she was in for very
reasons.
They came and reached her and they said, how did you get help? Because I think I need help too.
Yeah.
So Jared sharing his story in a very, very vulnerable and very brave way allowed Charlene to have that moment. She, the rest of the audience was moved by what Jared said, right? Because he's a phenomenal speaker. But Charlene was his audience that day.
Yes.
She was who needed to hear the message. Everybody else was moved by it. She needed to hear it.
Yes.
She then got the help that she needed, and three other people the next year needed to hear her. Jared has it saved at least four people because he was brave. Charlene has saved at least three people because she was brave. There is a ripple effect that happens when we tell our stories. Our stories are not for everybody.
That's right.
But the more specific we are, the more universal they will resonate, the more people will understand. I can affect and have impact on people just by telling my story, but there's usually one person who needs to hear it.
That's right. And I think Lorenda says that, you know, our stories connect to specific people depending on what they need, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's a great example of that, in that, you know, you may not reach everybody in that audience, but when you're in the moment, and if y'all will notice, when Tyler is sharing these stories, he's putting us in the moment, you know, and just with our sense of smell, our sense of touch, or, you know, our emotions, you know, what we can see, what we can hear, You know, and that's such a powerful tool to be able to use to connect with others and place them in that story with you so that those emotions and what we're feeling can resonate, you know, with others. I think that's, you have displayed that beautifully, you know, throughout this conversation, in not only displaying how to do that, but also showing that, you know, with your particular stories and then listening to other stories, how it really does serve to connect us. And I think there's, you know, in the comments, you know, there's a lot of comments coming in from LinkedIn with stories that need to be, you know, communicated. And even Larry chimed back in. I get it. It's soul stirring. So, yeah, absolutely. And then, yeah, even in grief work, telling the stories can bring healing.
Yeah. And it's so true, right? Like you look at, you know, I really, again, I had a whole, many, many father figures in my life. One of the most influential, in fact, the man who taught me to tie a tie, Warren Baisley, and who is, not only a father figure to me, but his son, Chris, and I are such good friends. We're basically brothers. It's, you know, brother from another mother. I see his mom as almost as much as I see my own mom. But Warren was a true, humanitarian. He was like, of all the men I could pattern myself after to be like, Warren is probably it. He had an incredibly deep faith, and he was one of the most, just level men on the planet. He, you know, he was a referee for hockey. And like, that can't be an easy job, because it wasn't even like professional refereeing. Like he was doing like men's league hockey, like, you know, that's thankless. And, you know, and he ran a beautiful construction company. Like he was an incredible, human. And unfortunately we lost him, in the last year and a half, to dementia. And, way too young too. Like he was in his 60s, and that's too young to lose anybody. And, I remember being at his funeral and his children, and he has three, Chris being one of them, and then Kim and Geneva, sharing their stories of their father. And, you know, the funny stories, you know, they're crying, they're sobbing because they've just lost their father, but they're telling the stories of this beautiful human. And I remember thinking like, that's how life needs to be celebrated. And it's amazing how cathartic telling those stories can be, because you remember the good times. And as you pointed out, the real key is to put somebody into your viewpoint, to let them see the world through your eyes. They say, never judge a person until you've walked a mile in their shoes. Well, I can't walk a mile in your shoes, Jen. I can't walk a mile in a serviceman's shoes. I don't know what it was like in Iraq. I don't. But you tell me the story, right? You tell me what you saw, how you did it. I can walk that mile with you. And now I can start to understand your viewpoint. I can have empathy. Right. I can have sympathy. That's where we gain understanding. And it's through those specifics. I need to know what that world was like for you to experience. As you said, what did it look like? What did it smell like? What did it sound like? How did you feel? What were the significant points to you? And when you share those, now I can understand.
Yeah. And what an amazing first step. You know, I mean, this is going to have to be round two, where I'm going to have you back, Tyler, because now I'm wanting to talk about, you know, how this is just something that I think all of us needs, you know, in our society. I know it's probably no different up in Canada. You know, we're fractured. We're having a hard time connecting with others. And I think you're right. Just being able to, you can't walk in their shoes, but if I can walk along with you, I might be able to at least reach an understanding to, you know, through your perspective. And that's so sorely needed, especially nowadays. But yeah, so that's going to have to be round two.
Round two.
You're right. Round two.
Type in the comments if you want to see Tyler come back and talk to Jen.
This has been an amazing hour with you. You know, I can't tell you how much I just enjoy not only listening to your stories, you know, and the things that you have to share, but you have such a wonderful way to connect with those who want to be able to get better at this craft, right? It's a skill like any other skill. You just have to work at it. And sometimes if you learn different tools, just like what you've taught us today,
you know, with trying to brainstorm on different aspects of your life and different stories that speak to you. That is such an invaluable gift that you have given the listeners right now. And there's so many ways that they could use that to not only connect, you know, in here so that they can become more comfortable and confident, you know, in telling their stories, but sharing it in a way that they know they're going to be able to connect, even if it's just one other person. They've done their job. They've done it. So before we end everything, there's one last question I do always like to ask. And before we get to all of your links and all that, because I know that anyone who listens to, well, if they watch this later or, you know, I will repackage it and put it out on the podcast. If they want to get in touch with you, I'll make sure that all your contact is in the show notes. But tell me about a book that you would recommend to the listeners.
Beyond the Power to Speak Naked, because this one's fantastic.
That's right.
this will sound weird. I will clarify. Are you concerned if it's fiction or nonfiction?
Nope. Anything that you think is useful.
Mm-hmm. If you want to see storytelling at its finest, unfortunately, I'm going to tell you about a book that is a commitment. It's almost 600 pages long, semi-autobiographical. It's called The Fool's Progress by Edward Abbey. Mm-hmm. And it is a masterclass in dropped loops. So creating and introducing a theme or a thread that then gets picked up later on and continues to get picked up later on, but it is only hinted at throughout. It is an incredible masterclass in storytelling device of present to past, and allowing the two timelines to converge. And it is a beautiful revealing of how we are all human and all share traits, because at the beginning of the book, the main character, Henry Lightcap, you hate. There is nothing redeemable about that man. And you spend a good 3/4 of the book going, why is this man even breathing air?
Right. Why is he still here?
Of space. And by the end of the book, you understand exactly why Henry is who he is, why he does what he does. And you love that man. You love that man wholly and truly. And this is where exploring our stories are so important, because you can't judge a person until you've walked a mile in their shoes. You need to know where they've come from. You need to understand that everybody makes a decision for a reason. And if I could give one book for anybody to read, not only is it thoroughly entertaining, and not only is it long enough that if you're trying to, you know, have a vacation book, this is a great vacation book. Mm-hmm. The Fool's Progress by Edward Abbey is hands down. It's an American gem, beautiful tale. Mm-hmm. It's one that more people should read, and I recommend it to everybody. And if you want a nonfiction one, read The Four Agreements, but Fool's Progress, if you want a masterclass in storytelling.
That sounds amazing. I'm going to actually pick that up so I can begin. I haven't heard of that. So thank you. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. So how do we contact you, Tyler? How do we contact you when we want to get in touch with you?
Best way to do that, Jen, is through my website, SeanTylerFoley.com. Sean is spelled the proper Irish way, SeanTylerFoley.com. So if you go to SeanTylerFoley.com, if you leave Jen, anybody who's left Jen comments, if you can like share and like and put this out, and when the podcast comes out, if you could give it a 5-star review, if you do that and you come to SeanTylerFoley.com, I will, right on the front page, we have a link to my free Facebook group called Endless Stages. And if you join up through the website, if you don't just cheat and go to Facebook, but if you come through the website, we give you a whole bunch of bonuses, including a free PDF of the book. If they want it, if they, you know, can't wait to get to a bookstore and they want it now, go to endlessstages.com, sign up for, or go to SeanTylerFoley.com, join up Endless Stages. We'll give you a free PDF of the book. I'll also give you access to my Drop the Mic Trainer series, which is an introduction to public speaking. So anybody who, as you said, they don't even feel comfortable with it and don't know where to begin, it's a great introduction to some of the ways to start to work on the mindset. And we also give a free 20-minute one-on-one get to know you session with me when you join through the website. So if anybody would like to learn more about me or have a one-on-one conversation with me, that's a fast way to do it. Go to SeanTylerFoley.com, click on Endless Stages, join the group, and we'll give you all the freebies, including a 20-minute conversation with me, and we'll see where it goes.
That is fantastic. And I'll make sure that all of that is in the show notes. I'll also make sure to put it on our website when we have this. You know, we'll upload everything. Want to make sure that you can get directly into contact with Tyler, because amazing human being. Just absolutely enjoyed this conversation. And this will not be our last one. Absolutely not. I will not let that happen, because there's so much more that we can talk about. That, you know, I think you're just inspirational and truly wonderful. So thank you for being here today.
No, thank you, Jenna. It was my joy and my pleasure.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and a review. Also, you can now buy some Communication 24/7 swag. Yes, please go to our website and spell the numbers out, www.communication247.com. Buy some merch, submit a pic to me, and I'll give you a shout out on the next episode. Remember to follow me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and also subscribe to the Communication 24/7 podcast YouTube channel to find out when our next edition of Unscripted is being live streamed. Watch during the live stream and participate by making comments and asking questions. Till then, take care.